Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Crime and Investigations, I Am a Killer is a brand new 10-part true crime documentary series produced in partnership with Netflix by an excellent production team including me, Danny Tipping.
And me, Tom Adams. Each episode tells the story of a prisoner convicted of capital murder and sentenced to death.
In this podcast, we'll be going into the making of each episode, revealing what it was like to produce this incredible series.
Every man has his own mindset and own power to choose his own destiny. And yes, I did ask for the chair, and the reason that I asked for the chair is because it's pretty much an instant death. Many speculate that the reason I had asked for the chair was to prolong my execution, and that's false. I know that I'm guilty. And what's the point in having capital punishment if it's not going to be used in a proper manner?
Tom, tell us about A Matter of Life and Death and the story of Wayne Doty.
So Wayne Doty was convicted of murder for the killing of, it was his boss when he worked in a factory. And he told us that it was a drug deal that went wrong. But he wasn't actually sentenced to death for that murder. He was simply given life imprisonment. Over time, he decided that he had had enough and he wanted to be on death row. He had had enough of his time in prison and wanted to die. With that in mind, he then killed a fellow inmate in order to get on death row. At least that's the story that came out through various media outlets and reports of the case. Actually, when we started talking to him, it was less clear as to whether that was the reason he committed that second murder, whether he did want to die or not. But A Matter of Life and Death refers to the fact that the killing was to get him onto death row.
I could use any number of words to use to explain my feelings towards Wayne Doty, but at this point in time, I choose not to because it doesn't do any good. Doesn't bring my father back, doesn't change Wayne's opinion. He wants to make a mockery of our judicial system and decided that, you know, that he needs to be able to fight for his right to be able to die. Well, he didn't want to do that when he killed my father. After he killed my father, he did everything he could do to fight getting put in prison. Personally, I think he's a murdering coward.
A number of the prisoners mentioned that when they first moved to death row, one of the things they found in their cell, and I don't think they found a lot in their cells, but one thing that they did find was a bag of...
It's a pillowcase, yeah.
A pillowcase of goodies, for want of a better word, things that other death row inmates had thought that this new guy would need coming into that wing. And so it might be soap, or it might be a razor blade for shaving, or it might be a book to read. And a number of them were quite touched by this moment of realization when they get there that actually that fight in the general population, which it can be for some of the guys, they saw it as a struggle to maintain their alpha male, their top spot, and actually getting to death row, it's almost as if they could just exhale. That pressure to be number one had gone.
And I think it's symbolically that pillowcase full of essentials. I mean, that kind of, that level of camaraderie generosity just did not exist in
general population. Nobody's sharing their limited resources.
We got the sense it was every man for himself in the general population. These are tough, tough guys for the most part, and they talked of the struggle maintaining their position.
And I think, but to be fair, I think we are filming in all the institutions we're filming in are some of the toughest high security prisons in America. They're not hotels, and they're not, I think anybody was expecting an easy time. But I think when you spend the amount of time these guys have done in prison, on general population or otherwise, you'd understand why they might be looking for what's considered to be an easy option. I don't think any of us would consider death row in a Florida or Texas penitentiary the easy option, but I think it reflects what the conditions they were living under.
Once we'd interviewed Wayne Doty, the initial premise of the programme was that Wayne Doty had killed somebody whilst in prison in order to get on death row. And after speaking to him, I think we found that it wasn't quite that simple. And like most people, he was a little contradictory about his thoughts and feelings. And sometimes some of the things he was reported as having said, it sounded like he did want to go on death row. Other times, and when we spoke to him as well, we actually got the sense that what he wanted was the rule of law to be applied. He only wanted to go on death row if that's what the court decided. But I think he was keen to be on death row, as it were, to provide closure to the friends and family of the people that he had killed. Now, within the film, it's clear, certainly for one of those relatives, that closure would not happen. Doty had his own code of conduct, whereby he saw being put up for trial and the potential of being sent to death row as the right thing to be done for his crimes.
Fitting, yeah. A fitting part of the process.
I mean, there is this notion that these guys that are on death row are monsters and they're horrible. And they, there's no question about it. They've done horrible things. But it doesn't define who they are. They are not just that. I wouldn't want to be defined by the worst thing that I ever did in my life.
So Wayne Doty was one of the interviews we shot in Florida, and was, rather than behind glass where they all were in Texas, in this particular prison, our producer directors, our camera people were in the same room as Wayne. And actually, it was a very small room. I think it was just, 10 by 10. And in the shot, in the interview, you can see just outside in the corridor, through the glass, you can see a guard waiting, and that would have been the guard that led Wayne in, sat him down. So our interviewer and interviewee, our inmate and our director, are really quite close to each other, face to face. And there's a lot of kit to get in a small room.
In all instances, in everywhere we shot, and it was easy in some of the interviews and others. We had two cameras, so we had one shooting straight down the barrel, if you like, at the inmate, and he was looking back at that and across to our interviewer. Then we had another camera at an angle, of course, so that we could get the cutaways and the side shots. So we had two cameras to set up, and then the complications of miking and recording sound. Obviously easier in a couple of the institutions that allowed us to film in an interview room without the glass, much more complicated when we were separated by a wall and a glass partition. And in those instances, we had to enlist the help of the prison guards to mic our inmates. But so we had two cameras and the complication of sound and light to set up in a small room, under time constraints. We were allowed up to three members of the production team in each room, and that would usually be the producer, director, another producer that was running cameras on that day, and then the assistant producer, who more often than not was looking after the second camera and sound. And obviously we wanted to free up the director, who all of them are very capable shooters themselves, to ask the questions and interact with the inmate. They didn't have a lot of time in a very intense setting, in a very intense interview, to cover off a lot of ground. So we didn't want them worried too much post-setup. with any of the technical aspects of filming in these fairly challenging conditions.
We made a decision very early on in the process that those interviews with the inmates would be filmed with the inmate looking directly at camera. We felt that gave an intimacy that the prisoner was then talking to the audience, talking to the viewer, which I think was absolutely the right decision. It gets us very, very close to the characters. But it came with problems. Firstly, if you're looking straight down the lens, it's very difficult to engage with the person who is interviewing you. So we use what a lot of people use in these situations. We used a mirror box that sits on the front of the lens and through a kind of periscope system of mirrors allows the prisoner, the interviewee, to see the interviewer, the director, and yet still look down the lens of the camera. So the two of them still were maintaining eye contact, could see each other and talk to each other, but to all intents and purposes, the prisoner was looking down the lens of the camera. We also knew that we wanted to have these characters on screen for as long as possible. Very often with an interview, when, as I'm doing now, when someone ums and ahs, when they pause for thought, when they look down at their feet or they're lost for words, in a lot of documentaries, you would cut all those spaces out. You'd get rid of them. That's not what we want on screen. And therefore, what you're left with are those bits of chat that are of interest. We didn't want to do that with this series. We wanted to see when our characters were pausing for thought or the moments of reflection where they remembered something or how they framed a sentence, what they thought about before they gave their answer. And so we wanted them on screen for a long time. And therefore, we made a decision not to see a lot of drama, not to go away to a lot of cutaways, a lot of general shots of the prison or whatever it might be, but to hang on our characters. But that comes with its difficulty in that you then have to, you do have to cut them, you have to stitch them together somehow, and you do need some images to see, which is where our second camera came in. So we had a second camera in the room as well. And whilst we had one camera looking at the face and our prisoner talking directly to that camera, we had a second camera that roamed a little bit, that was on a much tighter lens so we could get much closer details. And we would just get a close-up on the eyes or a close-up on the mouth, or if they were fiddling with their fingers, we'd drift down to their hands and see what their hands were doing. And it just gave us somewhere else to go when we did have to cut together various sentences. But we could still stay in the moment. We could still stay in that room with our prisoner, but it just gave us the ability to cut their interview and lose some of the bits we didn't need.
As you watch the whole series, and which I hope you do, you'll see that a number of our inmates are shot in the way that Tom's just described, behind glass in an interview room. And that would be the same room or setup as if you were visiting the prisoner that day. You'd sit down at a desk behind glass and have your visit via a phone, a telecom system. Obviously, we were able to use two-way mics and monitors. And then in a number of other prisoners in Florida, we were able to interview the prisoners without the glass, literally pull up a chair and sit opposite with them. So it differed from prison to prison and prison authority to prison authority. And we weren't always 100% sure what we were going to get, but we prepared for those eventualities.
If it was up to me, and you know, we'd go straight from the courthouse to the death chamber. I could finish this conversation, talking to you people right now, and walk straight to the execution chamber and get it over with. And look the family, the victim family, in the face and tell them, look, I'm sorry. I can't bring your loved one back, but if this is going to bring you closure, then so be it. Let's move on. You can move on with your life, and I'll be resting in a better place.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
We also shot in 4K. Again, that was a decision made early on. We shot in 4K, which is a camera format that gives you stacks of information in the picture. We knew we were delivering at a lower resolution to 4K, and what that meant was we could shoot on a wide shot, and when we needed to, in the edit, we could zoom into sections of that frame, so we could go tight on our prisoner's head and still maintain a good enough quality of image to broadcast. So shooting in 4K gave us the option to, or even creep in. We could do some slow creeps in to give a sense of suspense or whatever it might be at the time.
Yeah, there's actually, you know, kind of a lot of craft and technical ability and attention to detail in each of these documentaries, which I think really comes across. And a lot of it's very subtle, and you, I mean, I'm not saying it would escape people, but there's a lot going on in all those interviews in fairly confined spaces and with very little time.
The other thing to mention was lighting. So when we had glass is a pain because it reflects. And if you put a big light up behind the camera...
I think it's fair to say, Tom, you would never choose to shoot through glass, would you?
Not if you can avoid it, no. And so we had to figure out a way of shooting through glass that lit our interviewee but didn't give us horrendous reflections that could obscure the faces. We were lucky for the most part in that, for the most part, the glass was pretty good, was pretty clean.
I think if you ask Stuart, he spent quite a long time polishing at least one side of it.
Yeah.
And so he'd probably be thinking, what do you mean? I spent 10 minutes cleaning that glass. But it was, that was a challenge itself because we didn't want anything to distract. As Tom said, we wanted that connection with in the first instance, with our interviewer, our director, and then most importantly, with our audience. So you didn't want anything that was going to catch your eye or take you out of that moment. We were trying to have a very intimate and direct contact with our subject, with our interviewer. So, you know, a reflection or a sense that there was a barrier, you know, wouldn't have served that well. And I was absolutely knocked out when I saw the first footage come back from those first couple of shoots, at how good it looked and how close and how intimate and how striking the interviews appeared. And I think that's carried out throughout the series, and I hope the viewers get that, appreciate that.
We'd love to hear what you think of the series. Comment on Facebook or Twitter with hashtag IAmAKiller, and don't forget to rate us and subscribe to this podcast series.
The I Am A Killer podcast is hosted by Tom Adams and Danny Tipping and is produced by Sam Pearson, Steph Nardilli and Matt Talent, with editing by Susanna Lawrence.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing to do, stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. It streamlines your processes to make your business more efficient, which makes you less busy. Mail checks, invoices, legal documents, and everything you need to keep your business running with Stamps.com. Seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart. Schedule package pickups and see your cheapest and fastest shipping options from different carriers, with rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS rates. And with the Stamps.com mobile app, you can take care of mailing and shipping wherever you are. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Sign up with code PROGRAM for a 4-week trial, plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's Stamps.com. Code PROGRAM.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hi, I'm Ando.
And I'm Fer.
And we host Niñas Bien podcast.
We want to invite you to listen to our show.
Niñas Bien means good girls in Spanish. But you have to know that this is not a podcast for good girls.
Or for girls at all. It is a comedy podcast. So everyone is welcome to listen.
We talk about sex, relationships, technology.
We recommend movies and TV shows and discuss pop culture in general.
And there is Chisme Ajeno too,
a section we have just to gossip about everyone. So you'll find something you like here.
And you'll practice your Spanish.
The cleanest Spanish you'll find, we promise.
And if you already hablas español,
vamos a ser tus nuevas amigas. We'll be your friends for the non-Spanish speakers.
New episodes every Monday and Thursday.
Hosted by Acast and available to all audio platforms.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
What makes a stalker tick? I'm Ruchira Sharma, inviting you to delve into Anatomy of a Stalker, an original crime and investigation podcast.
That police officer's partner drove to my house to warn me that this man would kill me.
She'd look in the rearview mirror, out from the back seat would up pop the ex-husband.
Don't miss Anatomy of a Stalker. Listen and follow wherever you get your podcasts. The hunt begins now.